Once upon a time, there was a wise and just king. He ruled over a beautiful island kingdom with bright red sand beaches and stately palm trees, and he was beloved by his subjects. He lived a long, prosperous life, and when he died, he was overjoyed to see he was at the gates of heaven. He was told, "You're welcome to enter, but first you must cast away all your earthly belongings." And the king looked down and saw he was holding the red sands of his kingdom's beaches in his hands. Sometimes when you love something very much, it's hard to let go. And the king didn't let go. He couldn't let go. He saw in that sand his victories, his celebrations, his connections with his ancestors and the people who would come after him. He saw it as a symbol of everything he had done and everyone he had known, and he wasn't ready to let go. "I need some time to think about it," he said. "Take all the time you need," he was told. So he waited and waited, and the days stretched on until he believed he could have been there for years. And as he sat, the sand tumbled between his fingers, bit by bit. He saw the pile getting smaller and smaller, and soon he came to terms with the fact that he couldn't hold on to it forever. So he brushed the rest of that red sand from his hands and finally said, "I am ready." And the gates opened wide and he walked in and he saw his entire kingdom sitting there stretched out before him. My favorite priest told that story when I was 13, and it stuck with me. I thought of it as a lesson about materialism. You can't take it with you. And I love the idea that heaven is our own personal paradise. It was a great story for a middle schooler to hear. I saw it as a reminder that I was on the right path with good things to come. I read that story a little differently now. I'm going to talk a little bit today about the destination and the journey. The fourth principle is about a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And I'm so glad Gail and John asked me to speak about it. Because even if what I have to say today makes absolutely no sense, then you can be on a free and responsible journey of your own to try to find meaning in it. So it's kind of a freebie for me. I grew up in Stillwater, and my parish was St. Michael's Church. And I liked my church. I went every Sunday, and it was a comforting ritual for me. The ride there, the music that we would listen to, the stopping for breakfast afterwards, right? It was a comforting thing that we would do every week. I went through Sunday school, and when I was old enough, I was an altar server, and then I volunteered at the church daycare, and then I sang at the choir. And it's not just because I didn't want to sit next to my parents during Mass. I actually liked feeling involved. So every night, I would pray, and I would thank God for placing the ground beneath my feet. When I was a kid, I saw God as our best and only protection from stumbling off into nothingness, and as a steadying force that guides us and reminds us which way to go. Once a month, the Catholic kids got to skip school and ride the rowdiest bus I have ever seen. To go to St. Mary's Church, where we learned the prayers and the Catholic songs and the Stations of the Cross. And in 10th grade, I attended a meeting for boys who were interested in becoming priests. And then 6 months later, I got a girlfriend and we never talked about it again. And then I went to a Lutheran college. And for a while, this ended up being really strengthening for my Catholic faith because I had to defend it all the time against the Lutherans. I had to explain why bells and smells were a more appropriate environment than happy clappy. And then the next day, I had to talk about how blessed be the Lord was a bop compared to a mighty fortress is our God. And these are entirely contradicting statements. But I was 18. That was the kind of argument I was up for. As a sophomore, and here I just want to make a note, there's a folk etymology that says sophomore comes from the Greek soph, meaning wise, as in philosopher, and more, meaning foolish, as in moron. So a sophomore is a wise fool. I'm often reminded of this interpretation. Anyway, as a sophomore, I took a religion class, talking about the differences between the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, and that's where the problem started. For the first time, I was hearing about transubstantiation, the infallibility of the Pope, the intercession of Mary. So that is, the communion host is literally, not symbolically, the body of Christ. The Pope is unable to make bad decisions about morals on behalf of the Church. And prayers shouldn't go directly to God. These were some of the core tenets that separated Catholics from Protestants. Some people have told me, well, obviously, that's what the Lutherans are going to tell you. That's how they get you to convert. And that may be true, but I still have to wonder, after all those years, why didn't the Catholics ever bring any of this up to me? So when I graduated, I was still shopping for churches. And Jen and I lived in Chicago, and I tried the nearby Episcopalian church, and they did a high mass in 90-degree weather with no air conditioning. And afterwards, somebody said, oh, you're new here. Well, you know, it's not like we do it like this every week, but it was too late because I was gone by that point. And then I tried the Methodist church, and they did kind of a dance theater performance, which I was not into. That's not what I was looking for. And I went to the UU church, but it was way over in Evanston. It's a long drive to get there. So I'd go from time to time, having no idea that that would probably be something that I'd return to later. In Chicago, I probably spent the most Sundays going back to the Catholic church at nearby St. Gertrude's. And then I stopped going. I stopped going during the priest scandal. My siblings stopped going to Catholic church too. And once my dad, who's been Catholic all his life, asked, why did none of his children still go to Catholic church? Is there something he could have done differently? And I think we all had strong, rich, spiritual lives, but it was the priests who broke our trust. That was what made us leave. There was nothing my dad could have done. And I know it wasn't all the priests, or even the majority of priests. But it also wasn't a few isolated incidents either. It was widespread enough that it started to sound like a cliche. If somebody was a pedophile, there was an occupation that had a proven track record of protecting and hiding them, and it was the priesthood. And they justified their misbehavior by saying that the priesthood is so important. And they manipulated children with promises of heaven and threats of hell. And if a good and decent religion is led by people who treat their followers as a cult, then it's a cult. And I'm still angry about it. And it reminded me about what I learned about Catholicism in college, the transubstantiation, the intercession, the requirements for celibacy. And it made me think that the Catholic Church was trying to suggest that there was something magical about being a priest. And it gave priests powers that others could not have or understand. And that means that we can't understand what they do, and if we question them, well, that becomes another thing that the Catholics don't talk about. I see too much that aligns itself with faith and religion that says, I have the magic answers. And if you do what I tell you to do, I'll share them. And that's exploitative. I think about the story where Jesus feeds the 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And I was taught that this was a miracle. And this is proof that Christ was divine. Imagine what you could do with the power. power to create a feast from nothing at all. But I have always preferred the less miraculous explanation. What if Jesus pointed out the generosity of the few people who offered to share their food, and that inspired everyone else to dig a little deeper and share what they had until there were baskets and baskets left over? The way I was taught, that first interpretation says that there's power there, unknowable secret power that we can negotiate for. And eventually, this idea of power can drown out the rest of what religion is supposed to mean. The second interpretation says we can be better for each other. I think there's a similar dichotomy when we talk about the destination and the journey. On the one hand, we have suffer now, be confused now, and you'll be rewarded after you die. On the other hand, we have if you are suffering or if you are confused, you can examine it at any time. So when I think about a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, well, that makes a lot of sense. Religion makes sense to me as a search. I find myself identifying with two of Terry Pratchett's characters in his novel, Equal Rights. One says, I was confused and uncertain about all the little details of my life. But now, he brightened up, well, I'm still confused and uncertain. It's on a much higher plane, you see? And at least I know I'm bewildered about the really fundamental and important aspects of the universe. And his friend nodded, I hadn't thought about it like that, but you're absolutely right. We've really pushed back against the boundaries of ignorance. There's so much about the universe we don't know. And they both savored the strange, warm glow of being more ignorant than ordinary people, who are ignorant of only ordinary things. I like that we are allowed, encouraged, to look beyond the pre-approved places. That's free. I like that we have to be responsible for the ways that we pursue our spiritual lives. And I very much like that the key word here is search. I love that the body that directs the UU's spiritual agenda, at least in this congregation, such as it is every Sunday, is the Sunday Service Committee, comprised of members with no specific theological training, whose central directive is sometimes just saying, I think this person may have some interesting stories. And sometimes we don't, and that's cool too, because this group doesn't say, we're going to show you the answers every Sunday. We say, we're looking for answers too. And if we're all at different parts of our journey, but if you're searching, we'll search with you. The UU doesn't answer, or doesn't offer magical answers, but it does often give us a fruitful search. UU creates a space for an hour a week for us to stumble around and search for our purpose and our connection to the universe. Just for a bit, we create a steadying force for each other that holds us up as we decide for ourselves which way to go. And of course, there's something miraculous about that too. So that brings me back to the story of the king. If our jobs right now are to conduct a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, then we shouldn't be so quick to leave everything behind. In Tim O'Brien's The Things We Carry, he talks about grief, terror, love, longing. These things are intangibles, but the intangibles have their own specific mass and gravity. They had tangible weight. Our search is useless if we don't consider that weight that we're carrying with us. If we don't think about where we've searched before and who has searched with us. We carry those things with us. I have a lot more suspicion of someone who says, forget everything you know, leave behind everything you love, and then you'll get your reward. And I'm much more interested in, I will walk with you on your journey for a little while. Having said that, I have not been here, joining you on your journey this year. I'm sorry, friends. It's been a rough year for me. I quit my job when Jenna started a new job in St. Paul with plans for the whole family to move up to St. Paul last summer. But Maddie, my oldest, had been struggling, and she told me she just couldn't make the move. This is her senior year, so I said I'd stay here with the kids, and Jenna could come and visit us on the weekends. And then Rowan's teacher said they thought he'd have a rough time moving on to the 7th grade in his current school, but there's a new school in Hoka that she recommended. Well, change is hard for Rowan, but we agreed that this school seemed like a better fit. So both of my kids are struggling through a stressful year. My part-time job ended at the end of February, and I'm a single parent most of the week. Jenna's usually leaving Winona to head back up to St. Paul by 1-2 o'clock on Sundays. So it's just been hard for me to be here. I've said the platitude, long-distance relationships are hard, but if you haven't been in a long-distance relationship in a while, you forget why they're hard until you remember why they're hard. This is not where I was supposed to be. I had a plan. I had an image of myself as a particular kind of worker, parent, and spouse, and this year has challenged all of that for me. In the Divine Comedy, Dante says, consider your origin. You're not formed to live like brutes, but to follow virtue and knowledge. And in Kevin Smith's Clerks, Dante says, I'm not even supposed to be here today. And I have been thinking about both of those quotes quite a bit for the last several months. I look back at where I've come from, and then I look forward to see what a long way I have to go. And also, none of this is working out the way it was supposed to. The trick for me has been to reverse the order of those quotes so that when retail hell Dante says, I'm not supposed to be here, guided walking tour of hell Dante says, don't focus on where you're supposed to be or you cut off every opportunity to get yourself anywhere better. This is a good reminder that the search is not always easy and it doesn't always take us where we expect to go. I've spent a lot of time in this particular rough part of the search. This is the part where we start looking for good metaphors. The crucible, the chrysalis, the line for the DMV. We look for any way we can explain to ourselves that this part involves waiting, heat and pressure, some uncomfortable shifting, and when we get to the end, there's no guarantee that things are going to be better. They'll just be different. This is the part of the search where years from now, we say, hey, I got through that part, didn't I? But some days, as we're going through it, we say, I don't know how I'm going to get through this part. Again, just like the DMV. So I'm looking forward to that future day when I can put the stress behind me, but for right now, it's just part of the journey. It's part of my free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Because in the end, it's all part of our search. It doesn't end until we do. On their album, Advice from the Happy Hippopotamus, Cloud Cult sings about hearing Grandpa's voice over the transistor radio. And Grandpa says there's something that you need to see. So the kid travels with his radio through canyons, caves, and catacombs, searching, all the while saying, I am ready to see it. The song goes, I heard Grandpa on transistor radio. He said, kid, it's time for me to go. I know there's something that I wanted to show you, but it's time for you to find it on your own. let me tell you about rage when the signal died that day. There's nothing out there. I don't care if they take my life away. I'm not ready, and I don't want to see. It's been years since I heard my transistor radio. Yet I keep going to where it seems I'm meant to go. And I finally realize what he wanted to show me. Where I am and where I've been is the show. If there is truth and meaning to be found, we gotta keep searching for it. And it's nice to think about the day when we can throw down our load and receive our prize at the end. But I think we're better served to consider the road in front of us and just keep walking, even if it means our hands are dirty. Thank you, friends, for sharing your journeys with me and letting me share mine with you.